der Tender Spirits Podcast. Wir vertreiben ausgewählte Flaschen für Restaurants, Bars und Highballer. Und hier geht es um die Menschen und Orte hinter diesen Flaschen. Wo kommen sie her? Und ziemlich wichtig, wer macht sie warum auf? Willkommen zurück zur 5. Episode des Tender Spirits Podcast. Wir befinden uns immer noch in den Bergen von oder den Hügeln von Heppelberge, will ich mal nicht sagen hier. Und ich treffe den vierten Protagonisten, der hinter Heppelchen steckt, Mr. Nick Strangeway. Er war eigentlich der Grund, warum ich mich angefangen habe, mich für Heppelchen zu interessieren, denn ihn kenne ich schon seit, mehr als 10 Jahren. Er war eine Koryphäe in der Barwelt. Er war eine Koryphäe hinter der Bar. Jetzt macht er viele andere Sachen. Er hat eine große Consulting-Agentur in London, arbeitet ganz viel für ganz große Brands, Pernod Ricard, hat da ganz viel entwickelt und gemacht und lebt seit längerer Zeit in Kopenhagen. Da ist er sehr mit der Food-Szene verwurstelt, im positiven Sinne, und kennt sich da extrem gut aus. Da habe ich ihn auch mal wieder getroffen vor ein paar Jahren. Da hat er mir mal zum zweiten Mal eine Flasche Heppelchen mitgegeben, weil die erste habe ich einfach verleugnet, dass ich die schon mal bekommen hatte. Und so hat alles angefangen. Und Nick ist, kommt aus der Barwelt, er ist sozusagen der Mixologe, wenn man das Wort noch verwenden darf, ohne gesteinigt zu werden, 2019, im Team, und hat so ein bisschen den Zugang zu Bars und wie Barkeeper denken und hat so ein paar schräge Ideen und macht dann da auch immer mit den Maschinerien verrückte Sirups und irgendwie geht durch den Wald und pflückt Zutaten und macht Apple Drinks, und ich finde sehr inspirierend und er ist einfach ein wichtiger Baustein und fand ich super interessant. Cabri war ja leider nicht da, aber er hat mir so ein bisschen erzählt, was sein Businesspartner Cabri Hill alles gemacht hat, und das wusste ich auch nicht. Also Heppelchen ist sozusagen, Cabri Hill hat diesen Prozess für Heppelchen designt, Lebensmittelchemiker kann man glaube ich sagen, und dieses mit dem ganz starken Vakuum und Druckdestillation, und er hat zum Beispiel den Rotowap in die Bars gebracht. Vor 15, 16, 17 Jahren haben die Jungs angefangen, diese ganzen Techniken, die heute in vielen Bars vielleicht schon selber gemacht werden, in die Bar zu bringen, in die Barwelt aus einem ganz anderen Bereich, und hat das natürlich auch bei Heppel selber perfektioniert. Also, letztes Interview mit den Heppel 5, den fünften habe ich leider nicht erwischt, den Mr. Hill. Und viel Spaß wünsche ich. I catched up already 3 of the Heppel 5.
Mm-hmm. The Heppel 5.
Yeah, I call them the Heppel 5. It's my tribute to the
like
Jackson
the Moreland,
5.
The Moreland 11, the Heppel 5. We're shrinking.
I think there's some similarity to Jackson 5. It's a great bunch of people.
Well, I'm not saying which Jackson I'm going to be. I'll be Tito.
So, Nick, why are you part of Heppel?
Why am I part of Heppel? Yeah. It's a long story. I mean, I think you've probably heard most of it, but basically Val and I knew each other from London. I was working with Mark Hicks. Val was a customer of ours, and he came to me to make a product that I decided wasn't a viable option to make. And then about a month later, he phoned me up and said, I want you to come on the train to Newcastle and come and meet a friend of ours. And we did the walk that you've just done.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But we didn't have weather like this.
There was no bar.
There was no bar here, but just these beautiful ladies around us, the Juniper ladies.
Yeah.
And I was brought up here, and Walter showed us the Juniper. And on the walk, I was persuaded that we ought to make a gin. And this is 4.5 years ago. It's taken us a long, long time to get to where we wanted to be.
But to be honest, I mean, that was 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, you are really you're in the industry, you know liquors. Mm. Even at this time, we would have said, oh, there's another gin.
Yes.
And yes.
But now there's 5,000 other gins. No, it took us a long time. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the good thing was that it took us a long time. I think because it took us some time to raise some money to build this distillery, etc., we were experimenting. So, I mean, I think I came up, and then a month later, I came back up with some mobile stills and started messing around with things. And I think if we had the money, then we'd have ended up with a muddy, murky, foraged, feral mountainside gin. And I think the fact we had 2 years allowed us to refine everything to what I think is actually a very classic gin, Just Nick, turbocharged juniper.
Can we have a Negroni for Harry?
I'm fucking talking to the camera, you rude.
No, that's
I didn't ruin yours, can, did you I? Eh?
You should mix a the Negroni by side while we talk. Yeah, shouldn't you?
Of course you can.
Have a look around, Tom. Here, this gentleman. This gentleman.
Yes.
No, I also had an iPhone for that. That's okay.
We have one here for you.
Yeah. We are prepared. It's a professional bartender. He already has it. You know. Yeah. At Happel, the Happel 5 is all professionals.
The,
you know?
So the ocean's 2.5.
Riddles 11.
Riddles 11, yes, Riddles 11.
Okay, so cheers, mate.
Right, I'll have a martini then. Mm. Chin chin. No, and the time was a good thing. The time allowed us to test the product and test the machinery we use, which is cutting edge, and we hadn't really used the CO2 extract. We'd used vacuum seals, but the CO2 extract is fairly new technology. And having 2 years is a luxury to come up with something.
It made you more creative a little bit.
It made us more creative. I think it also focused us back in on what actually gin should be, which is juniper. And nowadays, gin is not necessarily juniper. So it focused us back on what actually inspired us. The original inspiration were these beautiful old ladies on the moor who produced this wonderful juniper. And having the 2 years actually brought us back round to the juniper. And I think had we got the money at the word go, we'd have probably been more about other bits and pieces and less about a classic gin style with modern technology. And I think that's important because as we tasted more and more of other people's gins, they were less and less like the gins I liked, and less like the gins that have survived for hundreds of years, like Beefeater and Tanqueray. They're the gins that I think are the ones you aspire to. And I want to create, or I wanted and we wanted to create, a gin that would be here in 200 years and was definitely gin, not unicorn tears.
So I just want to give a message to my grandchildren. So this is the, you know, this
you'll
is the product.
You'll be buying this in 200 years' time.
What we thought is Tanqueray, Beefeater, you know it will be Happel because that's the classic gin you can have. Yeah.
And it was a luxury to have 2 years. And I think a lot of the gins that are on the market nowadays, and I don't want to slag people off, is they are done, they're forced onto the market very quickly. And then when you taste them, you notice they're not very well made. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky, we assembled a very good team to make it. I mean, we were very lucky that Chris, via serendipity, everything seemed to happen via serendipity, that Chris happened to need a job at the time when we needed a distiller. So we got somebody who had 10 years experience. Yeah. Nowadays, gin distillers have half a year's experience. They're like the bartenders were 10 years ago. They were just coming into the trade and everybody was a bar manager immediately and then a brand ambassador. Gin distillers are like that, with the exception of a few.
your business partner, Mr. Hill,
mm-hmm.
He's not here today, so we missed the fifth one on the Happel 5.
Well, there's actually a silent six, but we don't talk about him as much.
You never talk about the money guy.
Silent six. No, there's only then we talk about the silent seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth. Kerry's important because he introduced the bar world to rotovaps 15 years ago. Tony Conigliari and I were given rotovaps by him when he was working at Stolichnaya back 10, 15 years ago.
Really?
And he
I
gave
never
the first ones out. So Audrey's came from him, mine came from him, and Tony's came from him. And nobody used rotovaps until Carebury had been nerding away in the Stolichnaya offices thinking of what weird thing he could do to change the flavour of vodka. And we put them into Harvey Nichols in 2004 or something like that. And it was him who did it. Tony used to come to the Stolly offices and borrow Carebury's rotovap. And then Audrey got given one. We went out to America and did a tour talking about rotovaps and what they could do to spirit and how you could keep those fresh, vibrant flavours. And we left one in America and it became Audrey's. And then the one that was
we
left,
forgot one.
Yeah, and the one that got left in London became mine and Tony got one as well. So that idea of using rotovaps was Carebury's. And then when I was working on the Absolute Craft stuff, whenever that was 2012 or something, he came up with this CO2 extracting. And said, look, I've got this flavour extract thing that you ought to try with craft. And I thought, they're not going to buy into that modern technology because it's fairly classic what they do. And it's enough to try and push them to make real flavours and macerated flavours and do natural extraction rather than going to a flavouring house. And he was already trying to extract CO2. So without him, he's very quiet and in the background. That any bar that uses a rotovap in its bar nowadays is responsible for it because he told Tony how to do it, and actually it was Tony who broadcast that use of rotovaps to the world. So when you go into Three Sheets and they've got a rotovap, this it came via Tony, and it actually originally came from Cabri.
Interesting, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So he's the mastermind. I mean, I know that he created this kind of process too.
Yeah, and he's process driven and he loves the process. That doesn't mean that if you love the process, it doesn't mean you get the final product, but you have to have the process to get to the final product. So I think, again, when you talk about the Magnificent Five or the Magnificent Seven...
Whatever. Magnificent. Let's stay for Magnificent. Something. Yeah, yeah.
You need the person who drives the process. And then you need the palates to refine the process into something that people actually want to drink. So, it's, you know, again, there's no good just having process and producing liquid that you don't want. So with the combination of all of it and the process, and then Chris actually being able to use the machinery on a regular basis, and then Val and I, you get to something that is a more complete picture, I think. And look at that sun. It's come out.
It's coming on.
I don't know how you managed to arrange this.
Call the Russian. So, but I have to say, the... talking about drinks, I mean, you are in this Magnificent Seven, more than whatever. You are the drinks brain. So, yeah. what's your take on how should what drinks you like with happen? What's the?
I mean, we're standing up here in the morning, so I've got to say the martini is the ultimate drink.
The and mountain martini.
Again, when we made the liquid, when we were testing the variations of the liquid until the final thing went in the bottle, we tested it in a martini, we tested it in a gin and tonic, we tested it in a sour, and we tested it neat, and we tested it against people we thought were competitive of ours, and if it didn't score best, we started again or refined it and refined it. So I think that's the ultimate expression of our gin. But the thing is, it's like, because of the CO2 in it and because of the way we layer juniper in it three times and then other botanicals repeat twice in it, when you build flavours like that, they become stronger. So during the experimentation, I was tasting everybody else's gin in various iterations, and I noticed that you didn't actually taste the juniper once you mixed it. And I don't think that's necessarily a negative. I think that might actually be a positive for some people's gin, that people don't like juniper, but they like lemon. So when you mix a beef-eater martini, it becomes very citrus. But with ours, you maintain that juniper because of that triple process.
Cool.
And I think that's the interesting thing. It is this ability that it retains the juniper and it's robust in drinks.
So we are super proud to bring it over with Tender so Spirits, bringing it to Germany. And I think we now have to plant some juniper because it's all about...
I think
about
you should plant some because otherwise it will run out.
If we drink more, we need more juniper.
We're investing for 12 years' time with this juniper you're about to plant.
Okay, cool. Cheers, Tom.